Greetings, this is Steve Schlissel, and I have the honor and privilege to speak today with Roussis Rashtuni, who is the chairman and the founder, the president of the Chalcedon Foundation in California. And I'm going to give you their address now and later so that you can write to them and ask for a sample copy of their report that comes out monthly. You just enclose $2 to Chalcedon, that's spelled C-H-A-L-C-E-D-O-N, and the address is Box 158 in Vallecito, that's V like Victor, A-L-L-E-C-I-T-O, California, 95251. You can also contact Chalcedon at 209-736-4365. Today, we continue our series on the voice of Chalcedon, speaking about the application of the Christian faith to all of life. And I'll ask Reverend Rashtuni to speak about the subject of classical worldview versus Christian worldview. First, what do we mean by those terms, Rush? What do we mean when we say classical worldview?
A classical worldview usually means Greco-Roman culture and civilization. Now, very often the term can be inclusive of other pagan cultures of antiquity and the present, insofar as they share in the same humanistic point of view. But the central source of the classical worldview, of course, is Greco-Roman civilization. Now, at the heart, it is man-centered. It does not have a conception of God in anything that a Christian would find acceptable. It occasionally uses the word God, but it is as a limiting concept. That is, there has to be, they felt, a starting point to the universe, and therefore they posited God. But he was not real to them. He was just a limiting concept. Basically, they believed in the gods, many, many gods. Of course, we are told in India there are millions of gods. Well, Rome never developed that far, nor did Greece, but they had an abundance of them. The reason for the abundance of gods was the abundance of concerns. For example, if you were interested in a sea voyage, you went to the god who controlled sea voyages. Mm-hmm. Childbirth, the same thing. If you were concerned about your health, you went to still another god. In other words, there were many gods, specialists, each in a particular field. And as a result, you sought their help. That was basic. You did not submit to any of the gods. There was nothing comparable to the biblical faith, to the biblical submission to the Almighty.
But weren't we told that our civilization, Western civilization, is built on the Greco-Roman civilization?
Well, insofar as it is humanistic, it is.
So insofar as we have built it on them, we're wrong.
We have built on them and have consistently had failures because of that fact. There is no real worship in Greco-Roman faith. You went to a temple and you made an offering in kind or in money in order to buy the help of that particular god. It was insurance for a sea voyage or for protection from thieves and the like, so that the gods of Greece and Rome were primarily insurance agents. And this was more true in Rome than in Greece, partly because their faith was further developed. Now, this is not worship. It is something radically different. And as a result, the religious faith of Greece and Rome was nothing comparable to what we mean by religious faith, which means that you know the Lord and you surrender yourself to Him to be totally obedient to Him instead of expecting God to serve you when you buy Him with a gift. You serve God, and the gifts you give are in thanksgiving. So it's a totally different perspective. One is God-centered, the other is radically man-centered.
So then there'd be no salvation either in Greco-Roman religion?
No salvation such as we know it. Salvation would be something very particular. You would have salvation if when your boat went down, you managed to escape to shore.
Yes. Now, in this thinking, where there's, this is a difficult subject. I want to know how to bring this up. I'll be speaking, asking you a question concerning epistemology or the doctrine of knowledge. There are some recently there have been Christian philosophers who hold that the knowledge that Aristotle had is identical with the knowledge that God had. Is such sort of thinking at the core an idea that eliminates the possibility of worship?
Yes, and it is radically hostile to biblical thinking. Because what prevails in Aristotle is Aristotle, man in general. Because there is no God to whom you look for things. Man is your source of inspiration, and you look to man and follow him. So that to get the one world order you want, you don't try to convert people to Christ. Aristotle converted Alexander the Great to his view of civilization. And of course, Alexander tried to create a one world order in terms of Alexander's thinking. He took in Central Asia and much of India and much of North Africa. And it was with one purpose. Salvation was a human order.
So this is inevitable, isn't it? If we take the
yes.
wrong starting point in knowledge, if we have some notion that the knowledge of God or the gods is the same, identical, to my knowledge at any point, then it has to be identical at every point, and the only thing that God may have in his advantage is that he may know more facts than I do, but I know the same facts in the same way. That's going to lead to a salvation attempt by man that ultimately is going to be coercive.
Exactly. And that's why coercion was basic to Alexander's point of view. It was his way of salvation. He not only was powerfully coercive, but Alexander the Great had no real use for marriage, which from the biblical point of view is not coercive, but is under God, and in which man and woman come together to serve God and to rear the next generation. Not surprisingly, Alexander was homosexual.
Well, he wasn't the only student of Greek philosophy who was homosexual.
That's right.
And yet today these men are held up as, of course, when I was in grade school in New York City, they didn't parade these folks as homosexuals. Today they might really boast about it, but at that time they were certainly presented as the founding fathers of Western ideals. And yet something's being left out of that picture, the whole biblical foundations of Western civilization.
How idiotic people can be. I encountered some years ago when a supposed Christian said that Plato was the greatest man next to Jesus in the history of the world. And Plato's Republic is a total tyranny, and Plato himself was a homosexual, as was Socrates. Things are not commonly told because we want to exalt them, and they commonly are in our institutions of education.
Now, turning to our institutions of education in just a moment, I want to speak about this subject, but first I want our listeners to know that we are talking to Roussos John Rushdoony, who is the founder and president of the Chalcedon Foundation. This is the Voice of Chalcedon radio show, and we're encouraging you to send $2 for a sample edition of the Chalcedon Report that you can get by sending that amount to CHALCEDON at Box 158 in Vallecito, California. That's VALLECITO. And the zip there is 95251. The phone number during normal business hours on the West Coast is 209-736-4365. I do encourage you to get this report because in it you'll find the application of the Bible to every sphere of life. Just as Reverend Rushdoony was saying that the Greeks and the Romans had many gods, what they did recognize is that there are many aspects of life. And the difference between them and us is that we recognize the one sovereign Lord who is the Lord over all of life. And the Chalcedon Foundation is dedicated to helping Christians understand how the Bible is the instrument of God to teach us where He wants us to live and how He wants us to apply the Word in every area of life. The one true God, how we can serve Him. Now, serving Him in education is certainly one of the most important things. And Rush, your first big hit, some people would say, the blast at the culture that made a big splash was the messianic character of American education. And right from chapter one, you expressed concern about the tendency of educators who would look to the so-called classical model for their foundations in education.
Yes, the classical model, which has really been the curse of Western civilization, of the whole world, in fact, feels that the future depends on man and what man believes and what man does. And the essence of what man should believe in is himself. And the essence of what he should do is to create a man-centered culture. As a result, this kind of education, unfortunately picked up by some monastic groups early in the Middle Ages, has become established as the pattern throughout the world today. And only through Christian education that is truly Christian can we alter and redirect education. We have a problem today in that for the past century, century and a half, beginning especially in the United States, we have believed education to be the salvation of man, humanistic education, together with humanistic government. Well, the result has been that man's perspective has been more and more warped, so that civilization is declining the world over. At precisely the time in the last century and a half that Christian missions reached out to the far corners of the world, classical education followed suit, and it has warped all these civilizations that were beginning to show signs of following their Christian faith.
Well, what exactly is it in this classical education that is offensive? Is it the trivium of grammar, rhetoric, and logic? Is there something fundamentally wrong with teaching children grammar, rhetoric, and logic?
No. The error is that these things are taught in terms of the centrality of man. Everything in education is a tool for man who will remake the world after his image and eliminate the image of God. So what we have seen in public education is the steady disappearance of anything Christian. A great many people in my generation regularly had the Bible in state schools because it was considered essential. But little by little, it was redirected in other ways, and all that was left was the reading of a few verses of the Bible, and then in recent years, that was eliminated. And as a result, we have a civilization today that is being educated in a humanistic direction.
But then someone would say, Rush, that the fundamental problem is not the classical, quote-unquote, approach, but that it wasn't a Christian classical or a classical Christian approach. And there is a movement today of people who are advocating what's called a classical Christian education. Is there something wrong with that?
Very definitely. What they are doing is to go back to where we were 100, 150 years ago, when throughout Christendom, the so-called classics were taught as though they were the real Bible. And we can be glad at least that while the Bible has been discarded in recent years, so too have Plato and Aristotle and others of the Greek classics. Their influence on Western society has been drastically evil because their basic emphasis is on man as the self-savior. They have represented another religion, and those who are trying to create a so-called
classical Christian
education are totally in error because they are reviving a paganism under the name of Christ. And the result is that their students, instead of knowing the Bible better, are indoctrinated into essential paganism. Classical education is essentially pagan. And those who claim that they are creating a classical education that is Christian are seriously in error.
Is there a problem with You wrote early on about the Greek values, quote-unquote, of truth, beauty, and goodness. Is the problem in speaking of truth, beauty, and goodness, or is it in the problem of allowing them to have independent existence apart from being defined by God?
Yes. If you stress truth, beauty, and goodness, what you have done is to take something apart from God and His Word and say, here are the standards. Well, if you begin with that, and you say truth, beauty, and goodness are the ultimate standards because we as humanists feel they are, what's wrong with saying racism is the ultimate standard?
You mean it's
you
just
have
arbitrary?
As much authority to pursue Hitler's point of view as you do that of the classical scholars. In fact, Hitler's point of view was born out of the classical tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It carried it a step further. It said we have to recognize that these other peoples do not follow this tradition, and therefore they are wrong. They were simply asserting that there is a right and wrong. Only their right and wrong was fundamentally anti-Christian.
But Rush,
well,
you would be in favor of teaching these things in a Christian context.
Oh yes, if you taught people what they really were.
Mm-hmm.
But consider the fact that virtually everything that Hitler taught is now adopted except racism. Abortion, I can recall when he first propounded it, and the horror it created throughout the world. Or the fact that those who were hopelessly moronic or retarded in some way should be executed.
Yes. Mm.
You go right down the line of Hitler's beliefs, and while they created a shock in the early 30s, today, except for racism, all are now a part of our society. We've just dropped the one thing, but we've retained the rest. And having retained the rest and dropped Christianity, what's to prevent us from adopting anything?
Well, I don't know that people fully are cognizant of the extent of our depravity and our willingness to accept things that are evil. It seems that all we need to do is lose our ability to be indignant or to be shocked, and that is something that can be erased by
yes.
continual exposure.
That's right.
So we will be ready to do anything at some time.
That's right. Someone should write a book on the National Socialist beliefs today.
And how they've been adopted as policy.
Yes.
And now with the success of the Human Genome Project and the ability to manipulate genes and to do various things to the human being in test tube and out of test tube, Hitler will look like a choir boy.
Yes. We're very definitely moving in that direction. One of the things of interest is that there are two men in Oregon, one a Christian pastor, the other a young Jewish leader, who are writing a book on Hitlerism, in which they point out the extent to which everything except its racism is being adopted in our society.
When you would attribute the success of that agenda in part to the adoption of this classical, abstract sort of idea of man being the definer of truth and beauty
yes.
and goodness.
Either man is the definer, which means he can perpetually redefine everything, or God is.
And that's the choice. It's a very simple one.
Yes.
Well, that is the fundamental issue that is addressed month after month in the Chalcedon Report. And I would urge our listeners to send away for that to see how this issue of who defines, because whoever defines is the sovereign. That's why God in the Bible imposed names on people at various junctures in their lives, indicating his sovereignty. And with the definition comes the power, and that's why Mr. Rushdoony is urging us to submit to God's definitions in every area of life. If you write to Box 158 in Vallecito, California, 95251, and drop $2 in that envelope or a check for the same, ask for an issue of the Chalcedon Report. We'll be together again soon on the next edition of The Voice of Chalcedon to speak about the future of America, the future of the world. Until then, the Lord richly bless you. Good night.